Just keep singing. We're still here. Yeah, and it's only going to be better than what I'm about to do, so that's cool. Hello, everyone. My name's Mark, which sounds really weird. I'm a leader at this church. I also run Alpha with the amazing Vanessa and the team here, which is coming up in April. So if you're going to pretend you don't know anyone who doesn't know Jesus, I don't believe you. So get them on the list and get them invited. This isn't on here, but a couple of things to say. And I know this is recorded, so I'm saying it purposefully. Sunday matters. Sunday, for one, is a command from God. And he's not our flexible friend. He's God. Number two, if I was sitting down and standing up all the time and writing them, because these wonderful people just sang my preach. And we don't talk about it, which is probably because I'm not very professional, but we don't. So the Holy Spirit has organized Sunday because he likes Sundays because it's a holy day. So everything that you said, my friends, and I wrote down bits of them, you called my name, my failures and flaws, transforming graves to gardens. Someone wants to press, you mentioned, Rob, back in and go forward. And who can fathom such mercy? You'll find that throughout the next 4 hours that I have. And then Wendy talked about promise, which you will find repeated at least 3 times. So God has a mission and he uses Sundays. There you go. I better go now. Can you put the next slide up, please, Jean? This starts to make it all clear. What's in a name? There was a lot of that going on. We're continuing with M28, which if you weren't here last week, then I've probably just punched you in the face talking about Sundays. So sorry about that. But we're talking about Matthew 28 for a whole year. And Jesus' command for us all to make disciples and perhaps be disciples. Today, we're going to take a look at quite a little passage of 2 verses, but I think you'll find that in just those little verses are jam-packed the whole meaning and history of the Bible. The prayer I have, which I'm going to do in a moment, is that at the end of this, you will all be reminded you're called out to be a disciple. That you are ridiculously qualified for the job. No sniggers, good. And finally, that there is a much, much bigger plan than any of us, but we are absolutely vital to it. So let's pray. Lord, I just give myself to you. Let your Spirit speak through me. Let your Spirit speak to each of us. And whatever we need to take from your word, Lord, let it manifest into truth in our life, in our deeds, and in our purpose. Amen. So I'm always nervous. I'm particularly nervous because Ethan has, as usual, reminded me I've got 15 minutes. But I also then noticed a group of stones on the corner. So I'm hoping there's no connection between stones and going over time. It's very biblical to stone a preacher, but anyway. So let's have a look at what we're going to read today. If you can change the slide, please. So from Mark 2, 13 to 14. Jesus went out again beside the sea. The whole crowd gathered around him and he taught them. And as he was walking along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's station and said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him. This innocuous small verse can easily be skipped through. I've done it myself. You know, there's a bloke called Levi. He's a tax collector. I know about those. Jesus says some magical words and off he goes. Fine. Brilliant. Heard that one before. That's brilliant. I'd like to suggest, though, that these 48 words, yeah, I did count them, is the whole story of God's redemption plan. And he calls you and me to grasp our rightful place as his disciples again here. And it's all in these 2 verses. But let's unpick them, and as is my way, we're going to dig a bit into the background first, because I think the context is going to bring out different stuff for each of us. Now, I don't know how much time you spend in Mark's Gospel, but I think the common view is it's pretty rapid fire. It's not like John, elegant, full of long prose about love. It's not really like Luke, a historian who's trying to get you to understand every little bit of the detail. Mark's just at it. It's quick. If you want to read one gospel quick, read Mark. There's not many gaps. There's not much fluidity. He just tells you as it is. And I think there's a really fascinating reason. I'm sure you know, but it's my job to stand here and tell you what you know. So here I am. But let's get into history. There was a man called Eusebius. And in 324 AD, he wrote something called The Church's History, which I love. And if you don't, you should. He was a lucky guy. He hung around in the theological college in Caesarea. So he had manuscripts and letters from all the apostles, from the first Christians, all in little racks. That's my picture. They may not have been racks. And he could just read them and write the church's history. And we still have many of these ancient documents now, if you're boring like me and want to read them. And Eusebius is really interesting in church history. He says that Mark wrote down Peter's sermons as they travelled around. He also tells us that Peter was in a real habit, like a lot of preachers, of speaking to the crowd in the moment and in the context of the moment. So what we've got recorded is Peter, in front of a group of people like you, thinking, they need to hear this, or that guy needs to hear that, or that put, so I'm going to preach that about Jesus. Doesn't that make Mark look different? It's Peter being a preacher. And this passage, therefore, Peter used. Peter told this story for someone or for something that we need to grasp. He wasn't just being a theologian. Oh, I've said the whole page. Oh, that was good. Now, in Luke and Mark, we have Levi. But in Matthew, we have Matthew, not Levi. I can hear Richard Dawkins at the back going, oh, that's because it's all not true. Maybe it's a bit more complex than that. What's going on in this story, though? Why the change? Why Matthew? Sorry, I have to go in and out. I'm struggling with my eye today. Now, I'm going to look a bit deeper into some facts because I want to redraw this out for you and get my 15 minutes in. Now, we know Jesus also had a different habit of changing people's names. Simon became Peter. So why did Levi become Matthew? Changing names in the ancient Near East was a thing that went on, but you had to be two things. You had to be a king or a god. Now, kings would change your name if they took you into battle and beat you well. And part of beating you well was to change your name. So if you were nasty, you might say, deep, big, fat loser. That's your name now. And it was your name. Otherwise, you were... This is important. This matters. God can also change your name. So why is Levi Matthew, and why does it tell us? What does it tell us about that? So, ooh, it's happened already. So here's Levi. If you read Hebrew, I'll put it on there for you. If you don't, it's just some squiggles on the top. Levi. It's intrinsically linked to another word, Levite. Whether by fact, whether he was a Levite, or by design in the narrative, someone wants us to see a link here. If you've ever hovered over the Old Testament, the Levites were a group of people set aside to God and God alone. Their role was to serve the temple and the people and administer worship. They were so set aside that the rest of Israel had to give a tithe so they could serve God and only God and not work the land and not do anything else. You guys would have been tithing to keep me, the Levite, in stake. I think it's a great system. The tithe to support the Levites was compulsory. It was law. You had to do this. But to be a Levite was not a job. It was a vocation. It was your very nature and your calling. To be a Levite, you were descended from Levites. You can't just be one. Your very birth gave you your name and your purpose to be a Levite. Was our Levi then descended so? If so, he was called by birth to serve only God. What are the Gospels trying to tell us about this man? I think there's two things, and I hope you're going to hear them today. First, we are confronted with a very profound irony that a man from the tribe of Levi is a tax collector. He has essentially been betraying his people by working for the Romans. He has chosen the world. He has rejected God. What makes the irony even more profound is that the Levites and priests actually were meant to collect taxes. But they were meant to collect taxes from the tribes to serve God, not Rome. Receiving tax money was his responsibility as a Levi, but instead of being supported by his fellow sons of Jacob and Isaac and Abraham, Levi, the son of Alphaeus, was obtaining financial support from the oppressors from the world. Levi had actually joined the world and rejected his calling. For the Jews of his day, for Jesus perhaps, he was a sinner. He had chosen the world over God. Have I ever done that? Have you ever done that? Have we ever gone with culture? Have we ever chosen an easier path? Maybe not even thought about it. Maybe I just do it. Maybe I'm just floating through my day. Do we just do what we do at work? Do we join in with office culture? Do we do what we're told even though we think it's morally wrong? Are we in business or are we an alternative? Are we a light on a hill pointing another way to God's way? Not Levi, he chose Rome. Matthew, like Paul and Peter, was a man who was given a new name by Jesus because Jesus wanted us to see something. And like the kings of the Old of the ancient Near East in the Old Testament, Jesus was making a point about Levi. Because here we have, in one single man, the complete failure of Israel. The Old Testament. It's his story. Go to the next slide, please. Matthew. Ooh, isn't that interesting what Matthew means? A gift or a reward of God. From Mark and Luke, we have the name Levi, as I've said, making a very, very express point. They knew what they were saying here because they knew the guy was now called Matthew. But now we have Matthew introduced to us in his own gospel. I think Jesus changed names to attest to what people would become, not what they were. Simon was a chaotic figure, but he will be Peter, a rock on which Jesus will build a church. Simon wasn't Peter at that moment, but Jesus knew he would be. The man Levi was pretty rubbish. There's a different word here, but we'll go with rubbish. But the same man as Matthew is a gift and a reward of God. Mark and Luke tell the story of his calling as Levi to emphasize the great, enormous transformation that was going to happen in his life from lost disciple from Levi to Matthew. To make sure we do not miss this point, Mark and Luke make clear to us what Matthew himself sort of tries to obscure. He doesn't make it clear. Some believe that is his modesty, but I don't think so. I think Matthew wanted to be Matthew. Matthew was joyful that he wasn't Levi, that he was accepted and loved no matter what he'd done, that Levi was good and dead and gone. In his gospel, I think he wanted you to know that this is his story, so much that he was going to write a gospel. The early church fathers, I think, knew this gospel mattered to who we were as real human beings. And like out of many books they could have put in the synoptics and in the New Testament, Matthew's in there. The story that follows the call on Matthew in all the three synoptics is the story of Jesus, as you may remember, eating with tax collectors and sinners. But in the Gospel of Matthew, the relationship between the call of Matthew and the story of Jesus with the tax collectors is vague. It's hazed over a little bit. And in many other places, the association could conceivably just be to make the point I'm trying to make to you now. But Mark and Luke make it very clear that this feast that Levi put on was at Levi's house. And then they go further. It was a great feast. Note that Luke is stressing great. Gourmet evangelism. That's my kind of evangelism. Sponsored by Levi, who is becoming Matthew. This would have cost him some money. And many, many sinners were there to come and meet Jesus because of it. Knowing the story in Matthew and adding it to the account of Mark and Luke, we see that Levi, having been converted to Matthew, becomes passionate to spread the message of the kingdom to his fellow sinners. Which is weird, because he's a Levite, so he was meant to do that anyway. Thus, the irony is wonderfully deep. Levi becomes the true Levite, becoming a Matthew. A betrayer of his people, and a sinner becomes a disciple numbered in the 12. One who, from the day of his calling, puts his hand in his pocket to communicate the glory of what Jesus is telling people. Mark and Luke fill out this story, I think, because they want us to hear the truth that is they're encouraging us to become like Matthew, to move from Levi, to become Matthew, to go out and use our blessings to draw in the Marks, the Lukes, because I can see him with one eye, the Robs, the Hannahs. What about us, though? Who were you before you gave your life to Jesus, if you have? Maybe, who have you become since that moment? Are you not becoming your Matthew? This little passage should tell us a deep truth that we all struggle with, our worth as God's children. When you hear the word disciple, are you shaking your head inside? Are you saying, you don't know who I am, you don't know what I've done, you don't know who I've been, you don't know how I shouted at the kids this morning? Perhaps you look at day-to-day life, the comforts of it, or the lack of the comforts, the trappings of your work and what it gives you. Maybe you just don't feel you're worthy or up to it. Maybe your life is too hard, or maybe it's just too easy. Levi was there. He had betrayed God, his tribe, and his family. He'd signed up to the world, made himself very rich, and he had all the shallow pleasures we love too. He had done wrong and wrong and wrong, and he had helped a foreign nation oppress and kill his very own people. He was complicit, even if he didn't do anything, because he joined them. You might say, what a lovely guy. Can we go to slide 5, please? Thank you. But I think Matthew, if he was here, would say, stop. He would tell us his story again, that was all true, but then there was Jesus. Jesus took him into his family and made him an apostle. Is no one here going, that's kind of nuts? Don't have him. There's loads of Pharisees out there. Go and get the good guys. He took Levi. Matthew would say, the moment you do that, the moment you give your life to Jesus, you're not the old guy any longer. As Paul put it, the old is gone. You are a new creation. You see, Jesus sees your future and your potential, not your past. And not your faults. He knows if you walk with him, he's got them. They're going to be ironed out. He has called you his disciple, just as he did Levi. He's calling you to be someone new. This is the walk we're on this year in M28. Whatever we are today, or when we filled in that little form, we have the chance to become something else by Christmas. Levi had to get off his stool and follow to become a Matthew. You and I need to get off our metaphorical stools and make an effort to embrace a new us too. So, in closing, who are you going to become? Who are you becoming? What story are you going to write? You're qualified because Jesus says you're qualified. You don't need anything more. He's given you all you need. Maybe we all need a new name. And as I finish, maybe just ponder what your new name by Christmas will be. Thank you.